dinosaurs and turtles been here since dinosaurs? They say sharks older than trees.
Yes, but no. The type of animal that those things are, sharks, like the body plan for a shark, a cartilaginous fish of that type, they have existed for like 300 million years or something like that. But great white sharks have not. Lemon sharks have not. Nurse sharks have not. Port Jackson sharks have not.
Okay, so I understand that.
There's a pretty big important difference there.
But they're pretty close to each other. They have not changed that much in 300 million years.
Well, no, they've changed a lot. I mean, they're just there's completely different species. A megalodon to
a great white shark, there's not much difference besides like what they do in their ecosystem. They eat. They are the big fish. They haven't changed that much of what they do.
Yeah, but I mean, so what? I mean, fundamentally, I could say life has not changed at all because all life is still cellular. And at a fundamental level, whatever conglomeration those cells adjoin together to create is far less of a real difference than the fact that life is cellular in the first place. So,
we're going off topic of what I'm trying to get to. You're saying that the species of sharks have been here for a long time, correct?
Yep. It's a very successful body plan.
Yes. Same thing. Alligators, turtles, that reptilian thing. I've been here for a long time.
Yes.
Mammals are more recent. Homo sapiens, which ourselves is definitely considered a much newer species on the planet compared to some of the other things. Would you agree?
Yep. Fun fact, turtles are the most ancient reptiles of all the ones we know
about. Pretty chill. You know, horseshoe crabs been here for hella long too.
Yes, they have. Yeah.
Human beings, Homo sapiens, have been here around 100 to 300,000 years, you know? We haven't been definitive about it, but pretty relative new compared to their species.
Yeah.
We've recorded intelligent in humans. They say what, 10,000 years? Let's double it for 20,000 years. Let's say they've made a mistake, all right? 20,000 years. In 20,000 years, our technological advances have been so crazy that we do not fit with the timeline of evolution.
I don't know what that means. Are you saying humans couldn't have evolved because what we can do makes no sense?
No, we could have evolved to what we were doing. For, you know, hundreds of thousands of years, we were hunting. Stone Age, you know? And then out of nowhere, we have all these complex things, all these complex thoughts. Building things, studying the sky, mathematicals, written language. Some written languages were different over different places.
Yes, are you saying evolution can't explain that? Or are you saying that now we're outside of evolution because we do these things?
Evolution can't explain it on the speed of rapidly progressing.
Oh, I don't see how that's the case.
How?
Because evolution can perfectly explain where our brains came from.
Yes, our brains came from. But it doesn't. But the complexity of our brain and our thoughts, they can't explain that.
Why not? A brain of our size is the only kind of, how do I say this?
But dolphins have bigger brain mass per body. Mass is more per body than humans. So is crows and ants.
No, they do not.
Yes, it is. You can look it up. Ants have the highest weight ratio from brain to body. And crows is higher than humans as well.
No, it is not.
I just asked ChatGPT. Yes, it is. Anyone look this up? Anyone in the chat, look this up. I know for a fact. And also Neil deGrasse Tyson has also explicitly said this on a podcast.
No. Yes. With some insect, that would be interesting if that was the case. Now, it's very, very hard. That would be really hard to figure, how do I want to say this? It'd be really hard to do that with the insects because they're so small. And so a really, really tiny mistake in your measurement would blow up the proportions. But even if they had much higher ratios than us, their brain still is so small, and there's so few neural connections compared to us that they just don't have the bandwidth to do what we can do.
Okay, but how would you describe that out of nowhere our intelligence has increased rapidly compared to other species on this planet? You know, dolphins, chimpanzees are some of the more intelligent species on this planet that share this world with us, have not increased as fast as ours. And they have, like, dolphins have had no other external force, like competition. Dolphins live under the sea, you know? They should have been able to thrive and farm their own food, you know, create something. They've probably been here longer than we have been. But we have spaceships, you know, submarines, crazy ass things, but nothing else has ever created anything besides a simple tool.
Sure. So I'm going to take a moment here to say that I'm pretty sure you were right and I was wrong. It looks like there are some birds that have a better ratio than us. I have no idea what the hell an elephant fish is, but it says it has a ratio that's a little bit better than us. And then apparently tree shrews have an extremely high brain to body mass
ratio. Tree shrooms?
Shrew. Like,
oh, shrew. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So thank you for that. I hate being wrong, but I hate not knowing that I'm wrong a lot more. So anyways, why have other chimpanzees and other things not invented tools?
Or anything, not just tools, because the first thing that a species would do would be, how could I think farm, you know, you want to be able to create food sources that would last you, that wouldn't have to go out and exert energy, correct? You would say that a first thing would be to farm food.
No, absolutely not. Because here's the problem. What you're doing is you're looking at this from a very, very species biased way, and you're saying, well, humans do these things and we're the best, so why aren't other animals doing these things? The first question you'd want to ask is, why would any animal want to sit down and farm, for example?
Well, they want to create food. You know, you want, every animal needs to eat, sleep, reproduce. That's all they're here for. And
yeah, and they do that successfully.
Yes, but not every animal is successful hunting. There are plenty of animals that, predatory animals, that die off because they cannot eat as much as they could. They die of starvation.
Yeah, but they're not going extinct. I mean, most life goes extinct. Most life has, and humans at some point probably will too.
100%. 99% of all species that existed on our planet have gone extinct.
Yeah. Also, people are saying this in the chat, and this is true. Ants farm. They literally farm fungus, and termite. I don't know if termites do the farming too, but the ant colonies and the termite colonies, they make them in ways where, like, they literally kind of has like its own air conditioning. And what's really cool about termite and ant colonies is they actually act like a mind, where each individual ant has no idea what it's doing, kind of like a neuron has no idea what it's doing. It just does what it's programmed to do in a way. But collectively, they do all these amazing things. It's like termites, some they build these fantastical outdoor dirt hives or whatever, and they're super skinny but really broad, and they build them in a way that in the morning the sun hits the broad side and warms it up, but at noon it's facing the skinny side of it, so there's very little of that direct sunlight hitting it. And they do that unintentionally, but it's what they end up doing. And I bring that up because if we want to explain the things that humans do, I think that they are just simple accidents of our neural anatomy and the fact that we can make sounds, but we started doing language for whatever reason. Now, I think that, like, human culture is a very different thing from evolution. I think evolution can tell us how we ended up with, like, our brains and doing all these things, like with language, we can look at the FOXP2 gene, for example, if we want to study that. But once those things are in place, we don't really need evolution to describe what has happened in recorded history since then. But that doesn't mean that evolution can't explain like where it came from. But
no, I understand that our physiology is based on evolution. I understand that. And we're going back with culture. We have
I want to go back to the thing of why would animals want to do what humans do?
Well, they would want to be more successful at whatever they do, not what humans do. They want to be more successful. They want to reproduce more. They want to grow their lineage. That's what every animal is designed to do. That's why bears bite other male bears to reproduce as many times as they can. It's just instinctually in them.
Yeah. That's what. This is correct, but it's also not correct because do you know what hamsters are notorious for doing?
Running on wheels?
No. Eating their babies, right? Why do they do that?
Of their own babies or of
other? Oh, yes. No, their own. They'll consume their own litters because when the environment triggers stress hormones within them, they'll do that. They'll cannibalize their own offspring because those stress markers, and it's kind of unintentional because of their captivity, but in nature, those stress markers are useful because we've seen this happen countless times. Like in Yellowstone National Park, they got rid of all the wolves and the populations of other animals exploded, but what they were actually doing was rapidly overshooting their carrying capacity. So in the short term, they make all these huge gains, kind of like a bubble in the stock market or whatever. Like, damn it, what's that company? There's this company that just overtook Microsoft. They make all what the hell's their name? NVIDIA. It's like the NVIDIA bubble. Everybody throws in with it, but it can't. Things that can't go on forever don't, and it bursts. And that happens with population numbers. So it's not the case that organisms want to just simply proliferate endlessly, because like in a vacuum, that kind of makes sense because that's the purpose of reproduction. So wouldn't the ultimate purpose to just do as much as you possibly can? Well, no, because it actually causes... It can cause environmental collapse, or it can cause disease to spread through the population incredibly quickly.
But species do
humans.
This. Well, species do this.
Well, I'll just say one other thing, and then I'll let you talk for a while. But what we humans have been able to do, I mean, it has been working, but we are literally a solar flare away from probably 7 out of the 8 billion of us dying. And so what we're doing is unbelievably foolish in a sense.
What do you mean by like an actual solar flare? That would kill a lot of life on Earth, not just humans.
No.
You're just using that as like a big event.
No. So what I meant was like if it somehow fried all of our electrical systems on our planet, which it could, it would be completely non-lethal radiation for the most part, but if we completely lost all of our ability to use electricity today,
100%.
Probably 7 out of 8 billion people would die in like
soon, within 3 months. Or
well,
I'd say
it'd be so. No, I don't think it would be quite that bad. So this would be the way I said it would probably not be exactly correct. But what I would predict is 100 years after that event took place, world population would probably be down to 1 or 2 billion.
Okay, but humans have the ability to rebuild it. Because before we had electricity, was not that old of a thing, human beings were still reproducing, farming, growing their societies more and more.
Yeah, but again, that's not what an organism is supposed to do. I mean, there's no teleology at all in evolution. But
that brings me to another point that, because we could talk about this evolution for a while. Let's just take a step away from that for a second. If you take any species out of an ecosystem, the ecosystem has negative effects. We all know the bumblebees is the biggest one people always talk about. But you take any species along anywhere on the food cycle, there's an issue. human beings are now outside of that. And no other species has ever been outside of that. So how do you explain that?
So you're saying if... This is one of the most tragic things, I believe, and I think it's what you're saying. If humans disappeared, there isn't a single thing about our planet that wouldn't improve.
Correct. That is what I'm saying.
That is one of the most depressing things, but yeah, it's true. So the reason for that is because we are so far beyond our natural carrying capacity. The only reason humans can exist this way is because there have been some really fascinating studies that have been done. It's been hypothesized that around, I don't remember the time, but I think it's 10,000 years ago, but maybe it's 100,000 years ago. I'm not sure. I think it's 10 though. Before 10,000 years, if you took, do you know what biomass is?
Yes.
Okay. So prior to 10,000 years ago, all humans and their livestock collectively represented around 1% of the terrestrial vertebrate biomass. So we're not talking about anything in the oceans. We're not talking about insects. We're not talking about plants. We represented about 1%. Today, we think we're about 98%. The billions of cattle and tens of billions of chickens and 8 billion humans and all this other stuff. The only reason we even can exist is because we've terraformed around probably half of all the usable land on our planet. But that's not supposed to be the case. Like if you just go to Google Maps and zoom out and then zoom in on the Midwest in the United States, and you can see that every single thing looks like it's pixelated, but those are just farms. None of those plants should be there. Absolutely none of them, right? And what that's done is it's caused unbelievable numbers of, well, there have been a lot of extinctions, but mostly it's just been us kind of blowing up. But that upsets ecosystems, and we're cheating is really the biggest thing. So
yes, yeah, I understand what you're saying, and it's all true. But if you look at the planet itself, it's kind of its own body. It grows, parts of it dies, parts of it grows, correct?
Yeah, the planet, like if you look at forests during the winter and summer in each hemisphere, the planet actually kind of breathes in an interesting way.
And every other species on this planet ever, we talked about the extinct species, the ones that are living now, they don't harm the planet. They don't harm their home. They don't harm Earth. We, on the other hand, do this so much every single day. And I don't think that the planet would produce a species on its own that would intentionally or non-intentionally hurt itself.
Evolution sort of states that an organism cannot decrease its own fitness and it cannot increase the fitness of another organism without itself benefiting. So, like, you know, a bee can help a plant, but that's only because the bee is also helped, right? But so that's a really interesting point that humans are sort of different. But again, humans are sort of, we are now outside of natural selection. That doesn't mean that natural selection and evolution doesn't explain how we got here. I think we kind of conceded to that point. But I guess to me, it's not really that much of a problem because I think we've just kind of put ourselves outside of natural selection for the most part. But there are other examples. I mean, like the Crown of Thorns starfish, it goes around, it kills coral reefs. I mean, it's like hypothetically feasible that because of the competition from that, if the Crown of Thorns starfish just got too successful, it would kill its food source. I mean, I guess that's possible, but it's also possible that it could adapt to a new niche at the same time. So, I don't know. Say whatever you want in response to that.
I understand what you're saying there, but I just think that we are so excluded that if you take us out of the equation, I think that evolution backed 1,000% at sustaining life. You know, sometimes species die, species live, but evolution itself keeps going, the planet keeps going. And I think that human beings are outside of that. That's why I believe something came down, gave us this intellect for whatever reason. But that was my argument. We had a good conversation about that. I want to bring up my second topic. Are you cool? Are you cool with
that's fine, but I'm just going to give you a recommendation. If you want to read a book, it's not very long. If you want to read a book about how, cause I hear what you're saying, but I think what we know about the brain and how humans work, I think evolution can actually tell us why we are the way we are. Cause like, for example, if you want to predict how successful and how happy somebody will be in life, it has nothing to do with how much, like what school they went to and how high their IQ is or anything like that. It actually just comes down to personality traits. Like, do they score high in openness, conscientiousness, and agreeableness and things like that? And are they charismatic? These are all just social things that a primate like us would want to spend our evolution points in anyways. So the book is called The Social Leap by William von Hippel, or was it his brother? I think it's William. So if you want to look into it, you can, or anybody in the audience. The Social Leap is what it's called. Anyways, what was the second thing?
Social Leap. Yeah, I'll definitely look into that. William von Hippel is the author.
Yeah.
Second thing is space. I've asked a few people this, and they have not been able to give me an answer. Some aerospace engineers, a bunch of people that think about things like this. Us, the planet, we spin on an axis, the moon rotates around us, we go around the sun. Correct.
Yeah.
Other planets in our solar system also go around the sun at different rates than us. Different years and different planets take longer or shorter.
Yeah, that's the universe, like gravity weakens with distance. So the only way for a planet to be in, I don't know what you call this, like it's not called orbital equilibrium, but that's what I'm going to call it. Like in order for Mercury to not just spin inward into the sun, its lateral speed has to be sufficient enough to cancel out the inward pull. And the only way that's possible is for Mercury to go faster than we go. So Mercury moves much faster around. It's not just that Mercury's orbit is smaller, so duh, it gets around the sun before we do, but it also is moving way, way faster too.
Yeah. And then, you know, we understand that the different planets, for their own reasons, let's just keep it simple, you know,
yep,
go around the sun at a different time. And we are in the Milky Way galaxy, and I believe we go around the black hole. The solar systems in the galaxy go around a massive a gravitational pull. I don't know what it is.
Well, we're not really orbiting the black hole. The black hole just is in the center of the galaxy. The collective mass, and it might actually just be the dark matter of the galaxy is what actually is making us rotate around.
Okay. But alongside with that, we always know that the universe is expanding. So different things in different places move at different speeds.
Yeah.
Around different things. With that being said, how could the North Star, or other known as Polaris, have been in the same fixed spot for thousands of years? The earliest time people have used it has been the Egyptians, the ancient Greeks, the Vikings used to use it to sail on their ships. So we're talking multiple thousand years. How has that not moved from where it is from our visual place? Also, the three pyramids in Egypt align with the three stars in Orion's belt. That's another example. But for thousands of years, if everything's always moving and at different rates, how could the same fixed things in our sky still be there?
Because of how insanely big space is. So I wrote about this in my book. You've probably noticed that when you're driving in a car, and I'm not starting at the very beginning, but when you're driving in a car, the telephone poles look like they're moving quickly, but the trees on the horizon look motionless. This is because the parallax angle you create by moving with something close is very large, but for something far away is very small. The closest star to us, besides the Sun, is Proxima Centauri, around 4.25 light years. If we take the distance Earth moves in 1 minute, that will serve as the base of our triangle. The distance to Proxima Centauri is the height of our triangle. The angle this creates is 0.00000001718 degrees, and a human eye can only distinguish the angle, angular resolution of about 0.02 degrees. Even if we allow Earth to travel for an entire year, this only creates an angle of 0.009 degrees. Not only is that too small to see, but it takes an entire year for that angular resolution.
Okay, I understand. But I understand what you're saying, that it's so far away that yes. we're not seeing the difference.
It's worse than that because you could argue, yeah, but after thousands of years, it would move. Yes, but the whole galaxy
it could be
is
so incremental. You know, like humans aren't going to be able to pick up on that.
No, it's not even that. The whole galaxy is rotating. So when we say this is a problem in this way, what we're doing is we're imagining that Earth is not just spinning and orbiting the Sun, but it's flying through the galaxy. And then we imagine that everything in the galaxy stays put. But that's not the case. The whole galaxy is rotating with us. So when you're on a merry-go-round, you look around, and the kid on the horse in front of you always looks like they're in the exact same spot. And it's because you're both moving,
unison. We went over that things move at different speeds. Like Mercury moves much faster than us, not only because it is a small orbital, but that's just the way that it is needed to.
Yeah. But
so it could, it's how we don't know this. I guess we can look at it, but the rate of speed of certain things should be faster and not faster. So we should lose sight of something.
Nope. Because the stars that we see with the naked eye are all in our galaxy and they're all fairly close to us. I now get to figure out the answer to a question I don't know. How far away is the farthest star we can see with the naked eye? I have no idea. 16,000 light years. That's pretty far. But that is still in our neighborhood of the Milky Way galaxy. So that's the farthest away star. The vast majority of those other visible stars are closer than that. Some of them, it's like literally less than 100 light years away. So they're rotating around the galaxy with us, and they have a very, very, very similar orbital velocity, the speed that they're moving, because they're in our galactic neighborhood, right? So, but the stars do change, is the other thing. They really do change. Polaris used to be a different star, but that's because Earth is precessing along its tilt. But we have maps of star clusters, and we can see that they have deviated from each other slightly, and we can predict way out into the future where they're going to be. Like, you can look at how the Big Dipper will just blow up. It won't be recognizable because the connect the dots won't match up to a Dipper anymore. It'll look totally different. Yeah, so that's pretty much everything I would say about that.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Some of it makes sense. It does. The math probably equals itself. Also, another thing that, again, with Polaris, if we are, you know, January, our night sky is facing outward, correct? But our night sky, so we're facing away from the Sun in January versus July or June, the opposite months. We should be looking at that completely different way in our galaxy. Still see certain things all throughout the whole year?
Because the North Star is above you. So if you're on a merry-go-round, and you look out, you'll see that your scenery keeps changing, But if you look up, your scenery stays the same.
If you look up, your scenery. There is no,
like, yeah. Replay. And,
okay, I can see how that makes sense.
Yeah, and the constellations do change, but it's the ones that are, like, outward from us. So when you look kind of, I don't know where you live, but, like, I live in North America. So, like, when I look at Orion, that constellation, I look, like, kind of, I don't really look up. I look out to see it because Orion is sort of, like, if you imagine Saturn, if Earth is Saturn and the sky are the rings, those zodiac constellations are, like, where the ring is. They're outward. Those do change. You can't see Orion for the entire year. You can only see it for, like, it's 6 months. I don't remember exactly which ones. And that's because we go to the other side of the sun, and then we're able to see
other ones. No, that makes sense. Exactly, that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm just but you can always see the ones that are above you, because that doesn't... above is never out of your field of view when you're going around in a circle. Any lips. Even if
the Earth is on a tilt, correct? It's not straight up and down. Our North Pole, to us, relatively, is north. But to itself, it's not north. It is not straight up and down. So if something, wouldn't it there be like an elliptical point of view of the North Star if we're looking at it from one spot to another?
I don't know what you meant by that.
The North Star is always above us, straight to north, our north. But that means that it's not straight up. Because our North Star, our poles aren't straight. I mean, they're straight, but they don't go straight north. We're on a tilt. You understand what I'm saying? We are on a tilt, so our North Star is straight above that.
Yeah,
wouldn't that?
No, the North Star is directly above Earth's geographic North Pole. So the point, like, Earth is rotating, so it has two points that don't make a circle. They just spin in place, the poles. The North Star is directly above the geographic North Pole. So the North Star is directly above north.
Yeah, but isn't our poles slanted? I
understand what you're saying. That doesn't matter.
My viewpoint is off.
Yeah, I don't. What happened to all my index cards? I have printer paper. So here's what's happening. I can show you. You're saying that the North Star is above Earth, but Earth is tilted, so it should be constantly changing. No. The North Star is, quote unquote, above the geographic, here's Earth's tilt. This is impossible because it's mirrored.
No, I understand. The
North Star is straight above it's perpendicular to the, what's parallel actually to the axis of the Earth. It's not really parallel either. It's just
and it always completely follows. Lined up. It always goes along with us. That's pretty insane.
Yeah, because it's
so far.
I don't
far.
Remember exactly. It's I think it's hundreds of light years away. So even as we go around the sun, it creates no detectable parallax.
All right. That all makes sense. You know. Thank you for that. I've asked a lot of people that question. No one has actually been able to give me the correct answer. You've done your research.
325 light years. You're welcome. It's my job.
Yeah. All right. That answers that. I still think evolution, we could go on a little bit further, but that's all I have the time for today. I'd like to thank you, Mr. Peterson. It was a good conversation. Best of luck, whatever you're doing.